Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. Dance in 2020 is not dead in New York City. It's just different. Next hour, we'll talk about this with ballet star and all-around role model Misty Copeland, who has a new book out as well. And tonight is the first program of City Center's Fall for Dance Festival. Every year, Fall for Dance gathers some of the best companies from across the country to give performances a preview of the dance season to come, and it's just $15. And let's just say the tickets usually go really, really fast. Well, this year's Fall for Dance Festival will be unique. Many of the essentials will remain the same. The two programs will feature 20 artists and 4 world premieres commissioned by City Center. Program 1 premieres tonight at 7:30 p.m., and Program 2 will premiere on Monday night, and both will be available on demand through November 1st. Joining me now for a preview of the 17th Annual Fall for Dance Festival is Stanford Makishi, Artistic Director for City Center. Stanford, welcome to All of It.
Thank you, Allison. Thank you for having me.
So Fall for Dance is known for having something for everyone. We have world premieres of new work. There are classic pieces. But given the times, what were some of the guiding principles that you thought about when you planned which pieces would be featured this year in 2020?
We really didn't want to deviate too much from our usual Fall for Dance format in that we wanted to present the greatest breadth of programming as possible. But the normal Fall for Dance features 20 companies, and this year we limited ourselves to 8, and it was actually a little difficult to try to represent everything and everyone mm-hmm. over just eight pieces. But one thing that we did make a priority was giving Black artists prominence and making sure that they were really well represented. And that was, actually very easy to do because there were so many mm-hmm. great artists in New York. Three of our 4 commissions, in fact, are by Black choreographers. And that was really important to us as we were putting together the program.
Practically, when did you start planning this year's festival to be virtual?
We started planning in earnest, I would say, sometime in April when we realized that we probably were not going to be able to get together as we usually do. I will say that we naively thought for a while that it made sense for us to plan a virtual version if we had to go in that direction, while also planning a live version. And so we were operating on 2 tracks, but it was probably sometime in May, along with everybody else, mm-hmm. when we realized that a fall opening was probably really, really unlikely.
Well, once you realized you were going to pivot to being virtual for sure, what were some of the challenges? What are some of the challenges of presenting dance virtually?
Well, there were 2 challenges. One was purely artistic, and that is that, we didn't want to continue to go down the path of bringing people together via Zoom and having the Zoom recording be the artistic product. So it became a matter of how do we do something else in a way that's safe? And that brings in the other sort of challenge. And it was, yes, how do we bring people together safely? The answer to the first question, how do we make it artistically made perhaps a little more textured and interesting, was let's do it from our stage. That's not something mm-hmm. that a lot of people are doing. And so let's endeavor to, film a festival from our actual building. As we were planning this, we didn't really know what safe meant. And we thought we were fantasizing that we would actually have a festival in real time and stream it as it was happening. But we realized that there was no safety plan or playbook that would actually have allowed that to happen, that we really couldn't do that safely given all of the information that we're receiving. Really, it seemed by the hour as we were inching toward our festival. And so the other thing that we needed to think about was to organize just the tremendous amount of information that was being, you know, handed to us from so many different sources, and trying to make sense of it and finding those bits of information that were specific to our building, what we wanted to do as a festival. And then I have to say that our operations and production people did such a tremendous job of taking that information that was coming from everywhere and mm-hmm. organizing it into really a protocol that we felt really good about. But then I think every one of us felt that without the advice of a medical professional, that we really didn't feel 100% confident going forward. And so in came Dr. Wendy Zajcek, who was recently featured in a New York Times article.
Sure, yeah.
You know, for actually helping people like us, institutions like ours, to create work and come together again safely. And so with her blessing and her further guidance, we were able to move forward with a degree of confidence that we actually didn't have before.
What was, or how did the protocols, the health protocols, what impact did it have on the creative process?
What it did mainly was it actually opened many doors for us. We were so conservative in our planning that we really placed a whole lot of restrictions on ourselves. And in really even up to, I would say, maybe a month and a half out from the festival, we were saying to ourselves, you know, there's no way that we can have a piece larger than a solo on stage. And then we actually opened that up for ourselves a bit by saying, actually, we could have duets as long as the people performing lived together and they were in the same domestic bubble. But what Dr. Zajcek and her protocols did for us was actually open up the possibilities even further. And she made it safe for small groups of people who did not live in the same domestic bubble to perform alongside with each other. And that really, really was a game changer. And that's the only way that we could have the ballet dancers Sarah Murns and David Hallberg, who do not live together, perform together. That's how we were able to have three musicians play alongside the tap dance artist, Ormisha. That's how we were able to have three members of Ballet Hispanico who do not live together perform alongside each other. And so it really, we actually ended up being able to do more than we thought we were going to be able to do.
My guests are Stanford Makishi, our artistic director for City Center. We're talking about Fall for Dance. Tickets are available at newyorkcitycenter.org. As I said, tonight debuts program number one. Let's talk a little bit about that. You mentioned Ballet Hispanico. There's an excerpt from a piece called 18 plus 1. That's a significant number, 19, that it adds up to. Can you explain why for our audience?
Well, it's actually unfortunately it's only three members of the company who are going to be in performing an excerpt from that piece, and you know it's 18 plus one. It represents the choreographer Gustavo Ramirez Sanzano's sort of time being a choreographer. He's celebrating his 19th year as a creator, and I imagine that's what the title refers to, but we're just showing about 8 minutes of that larger piece. But it will be the New York premiere of that piece. It's never been seen in New York before.
Also, Martha Graham's Lamentation, featuring Natasha Diamond Walker. When did Graham create this piece, and why did you think it was a good fit for this particular year's program?
The piece was created in 1930, and there's so much that's important about it. It sort of, you know, signaled, you know, the arrival of modernism in American modern dance and in American dance. And it, you know, it's been said that the piece is not just about the figure of a grieving woman, but it's about grief itself, or that it is grief itself. And, it, you know, we did have to acknowledge this highly unusual and tumultuous time that we're living in. And We just thought, you know, this little 4-minute acknowledgement of this moment in our history was really something that we needed to have as just a quiet little statement, acknowledging, you know, the world that we're living in right now.
Jamar Roberts, who's the resident choreographer for the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater, will be performing the world premiere of, I don't know if I'm saying this right, Morani Mungu, which is Black Warrior, Black God, which he also choreographed. This is the third piece he's debuted at City Center. What makes him a good fit for this program?
He's just an exceptional artist. You know, when we were, you know, looking and thinking about, you know, the commissions that we wanted to put on our stage with our, you know, first virtual festival, we thought, you know, who is really interesting right now? And, you know, Jamar made two stunning pieces for the Ailey Company and a really, truly glorious piece and very moving piece for the Works in Process series that's usually live at the Guggenheim, but this year became a series of virtual pieces that were commissioned by Works in Process, and he just made such a beautiful and just moving piece. And we thought, you know, this is an artist really who's making work, speaking to the moment, and we just thought Jamar, yes, definitely. and when we asked him, you know, what he wanted to do, he said he wanted to make a 15-minute solo for himself, and he thought that's even better. Yes, let's do this.
And you mentioned the safety protocols, which is making it possible for New York City Ballet principal dancer Sarah Mearns and American Ballet Theater principal David Hallberg to perform together. And I understand this is the first time they're going to perform together?
It is the very first time. And they've both said to me that they've been wanting to dance with each other for years and years and years. And their schedules, you know, they don't dance for the same company, and they're both highly sought after as artists, and so they just never had the opportunity. And I will say that something that's kind of special about City Center's Fall for Dance Festival is our desire to try to make artists' dreams come true and to give them the opportunity to pursue the special projects that they've always wanted to do. And this is the perfect time when Sarah and David, frankly, are not nearly as busy as they usually are, and nor was the choreographer Christopher Wilden. And like in the normal times, we would never have been able to bring these three artists together. But because of this very unusual moment, you know, they all had the time. And then with, you know, the medical guidance from Dr. Zychek, we were able to actually safely get them into a dance studio together. They were masked while they were rehearsing, but they were able to work together. And I think that they were starved for that opportunity. And so thank goodness that a little bit of information made it all possible.
My guest is Stanford Makishi, Artistic Director for City Center. We're talking about Fall for Dance, and we just have run down what the debut program tonight will be at 7:30 p.m. On Monday, October 26th, Program 2 debuts. They'll both be available on demand until Sunday, November 1st. So let's talk about Program 2 in our last few moments. Tap dance from Dormisha. She's amazing. Some people, I think the New York Times called her the queen of tap in a recent article and said she had ferocious talent. And she is performing a new piece. What is her new piece about?
Her new piece, she said that it really just acknowledges some female black tap dancers who came before her. And so it's not any kind of overt reference to the past, but I think it's an homage. And it's thrilling, thrilling, thrilling. She's just such an extraordinary artist. And she's really, you know, the dance royalty that she's been called by the press. I mean, she's just really such an interesting, creative voice, and the interaction that she has with the three musicians that she collaborated with really is just such a magical exchange, and I can't wait for the world to see it.
There is another, there's a duet called Concerto 622, which was choreographed by Lara Lubavitch in 1985 during the AIDS epidemic. How does this duet bring that health crisis to life?
Well, you know, we've been wanting to program that piece, the duet from Concerto 622, honestly, for years. And, you know, there is something about the piece that's a little sad, but it's also very beautiful. It's about the friendships that were formed during the AIDS crisis. And as Lara Lubavitch himself has said, you know, it sort of speaks to the reality of that time when friends were helping their friends die. Mm. And it just seems so appropriate during this current health crisis to refer to the piece's original intention. And so we thought this was the year that we were finally going to do it, and it just felt really right to us. And the artists whom we asked to perform it, the New York City Ballet principal dancers, Adrian Danchig-Waring and Joseph Gordon, also really felt the intention of this, of the piece really speak to them. And they also, you know, said that, you know, in the ballet repertoire, it's so rare for two male dancers to be given a tender duet. And so they, who are a couple in real life, really felt like this was something that they really, really wanted to do and had to do. And so that's why it's there in our programming.
Oh, I bet it's going to be, that's going to be very special. A piece that was commissioned from choreographer Kyle Abraham will have a world premiere. What can you tell us about that?
It's stunning. It really it's just so beautiful. You know, Calvin Royal III has been a member of ABT, I guess, for about a decade, and he was just promoted to the rank of principal. And this will, in fact, be his very first performance publicly. Oh. As a principal dancer.
And exciting.
So it's really exciting. It's exciting for all of us. And, you know, it was a process, you know, as with everything in this time, you know, nothing is really easy. And so we went through sort of many, many ideas for Calvin until we arrived at this kind of magical, you know, collaboration between him and Kyle. And what's so unusual about that is that, you know, artists are starting to get busy. And so Calvin was upstate, you know, with an ABT project. And, you know, Kyle was in his apartment in Brooklyn. And the thought of making a new choreography when they were so geographically far away from each other was, it seemed impossible. But you know what? People, you know, rehearse on Zoom these days. So, you know, Kyle made some material. He sent it to Calvin, and Calvin looked at it. They discussed possibilities. But then Kyle ran into a bit of a roadblock. He really didn't feel the inspiration of that he usually gets from being in a physical space with someone. And so he called the New York City Ballet principal, Taylor Stanley, and asked him if he was in town and if he wanted to get in a studio together. And so in a highly unusual process, Kyle and Taylor worked together to make a solo that Taylor then transferred onto Calvin's body. Hmm. And so without Taylor being this crucial interpreter and communicator, the piece would never have happened. And, you know, I think everyone's getting really, really creative in this unusual time because, you know, artists want to make art. And so, you know, that's how it happened.
And I'm just going to give a tease about one of the final pieces. It is the words Balanchine and Gershwin. That's what we're going to tell people. That's I'm just going to call it a tease. Stanford Makishi is artistic director for City Center. Fall for Dance starts tonight. For tickets, go to newyorkcitycenter.org. Congratulations on making this happen, Stanford.
Thank you so much, Allison.
This is all of it.